seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome to more Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy to be back with you on the afternoon drive. And well, we have plenty of local and national sports to get into. So much is happening right now as we're gearing up for the final couple of days of the spring sports season. We will start our recaps of baseball and softball. That's coming up a little bit later here on Drive Time Sports. We're going to be joined today by Coach Jeff Cincineros. What a performance from the Carbon baseball team. And truly, they put together an incredible run, winning 6 games in 3 days. We're going to talk to Coach Cincineros about that. And also, it's Football Tuesday. I don't think tons happening in the NFL, but there are some storylines specifically in Houston and Green Bay. So if you love the NFL, Football Tuesday's back today. We have plenty to talk about in that regard, plus some of the most interesting storylines with OTAs. How important are OTAs, by the way? That's another question for you. Other than that, not a whole lot going on in the national sports scene as far as some of the big headlines are concerned. I get last night, did you see this Mets-Braves game? Kevin Pillar taking a 94-mile-an-hour fastball right off of the face. Multiple nasal fractures after he was hit. Blood was spewing all over the floor, all over the field. He met today with a facial specialist in Atlanta. He was placed on the 10-day IL, but he's going to be out for quite some time. It was a scary moment. Brought in the go-ahead run because bases were juiced. He was hit by a pitch. He got to advance to first. Winning run came in. Go-ahead run came in. And he was joking about it on Twitter last night. Seemed to be in good spirits. I just couldn't imagine. 94 miles an hour off the face. It's hard to watch the video. I've watched it a couple of times, but it's really difficult. I'm not squeamish. Really, those things don't typically bother me. I just can't imagine the pain that Kevin Pillar was feeling last night. He's going to be out for a little while. Scary moment. Nasal fractures. That's what the official ruling is off of that shot last night. Let's take a look at the schedule in the NBA. Play-in round basketball tips off here in about 20 minutes. We get Charlotte at Indiana, Washington at Boston. That's what we get tonight in the play-in round. Now, if you're unfamiliar with the way this works, 7 versus 8 is Boston and Washington. The winner of that game is automatically the 7 seed. The loser of that game will play the winner of Indiana-Charlotte for the 8 seed. That's the way the play-in round works. So tomorrow we get the Western Conference. So we get the Lakers and Warriors. Winner of that game is the 7 seed. They get Phoenix in the first round. The loser has to play the winner of Memphis and San Antonio. In the Eastern Conference, the winner of Boston-Washington gets Brooklyn. Congratulations. That's what you get for winning the play-in round. So again, just 2 games in the NBA play-in round basketball getting set to begin. First time we've had this outside of the bubble. We had the play-in rounds last year. I'm curious to see how this plays out this year. Does it stay all the same, 7-8, 7-8 in both conferences? I kind of hope that's the outcome. I really do. If you're a Jazz fan, you're hoping for Memphis or San Antonio in the first round. That's what you're hoping for. You need the Lakers or the Warriors to lose 2 games if you're a Jazz fan. We're going to break for just a moment. A lot coming up on the show today. Again, Coach Jeff Cincineros is going to join us in just a couple of moments. Plus, we are going to talk a lot of NFL. It's Football Tuesday, and it's here on Drive Time Sports. We're back right after this.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things. Play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow!
We're going to begin our season wrap-up interviews for baseball The baseball and softball season coming to a close over the weekend. We're going to start by talking about the Carbon Dinos, a terrific run. I mean, this team wins 6 games in 3 days, comes within 1 game of winning a state championship, but they ultimately fall short in a loss to Grantsville. Joining us right now in the studio to talk about that, we have head coach Jeff Cincineros. And, Coach, it's always a pleasure. I appreciate you making time to stop by. Thank you.
Well, it's great to be back in the studio. The last few interviews have all been over the phone, and it's nice to get back in the studio, Jordan, and wrap up this baseball season. I appreciate it.
No, definitely, Coach. And as I alluded to, you guys had to win had to play a lot of baseball in a very short period of time. You get 6 wins in 3 days, work your way all the way through the one loss bracket. Before we break that down, I go back to an interview that we did last week, and we both had agreed that the path was set up for you. I mean, American Leadership, and then if it was Emory or North St. Pete, there's a team you had some success with. Maybe it's Richfield, maybe it's Judge. You felt comfortable about that matchup. It seemed like the one loss bracket was set up. However, you had to go through Judge and Juab to get back into the upper half of the bracket. It was not an easy route, to say the least.
No, a week ago when we were talking, I didn't think Judge would drop in the loser's bracket Thursday. I didn't think Juab would drop down as well. I figured Grantsville would be back in that one-loss bracket along with Richfield. And I liked our odds going against both those two teams in that one-loss bracket. And instead, we got a chance to go through, Judge and Juab, and then eventually Richfield and back to Grantsville. And either way, I mean, we talk about all the time, you tell your kids when you're a coach, if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best. And it's so true. It's just something that we focused on all week, and we took it game by game. And, whoever was in front of us is what we prepared for. We didn't know a lot about Judge going into that game. We'd already played Juab once, obviously Richfield a few times. Had played Emory in our region. We played ALA the week before. And, so we kind of felt good about all those teams. But, Judge was kind of one of those teams that we didn't know a lot about. And we just had to take it, as the game presented itself and go through that. But, again, the road, the road to me, if you drop in the one loss bracket, especially opening weekend, is almost an impossible road. And with that being said, nothing is impossible, especially when you're with sports. But physically, I'm not sure if it's capable of a team doing that. I felt like we still had good pitching, even in our last game with some of the younger guys we had on the mound. I still felt like our pitching was great, but our guys was just physically exhausted from playing 2 games already that day in a hot heat and playing 6 games up to that point, that we were kicking balls around on defense. Mentally, was the biggest challenge, especially when we were hitting. We let a lot of good pitches go that we weren't letting go all week and swung at some bad pitches, and it wasn't like we were seeing, awesome stellar pitching. I mean, we faced Grantsville's best pitcher in the first championship game and was able to beat him. So I think it was just a matter of fatigue that took over, and I think it's something that maybe the High School Athletic Association should look at, of maybe pushing that, if necessary, game back to a Monday. It doesn't, give, in my opinion, one team a lot more advantage. I think it's more of a safety thing if you're talking about playing in 80 to 90 degree temperatures on a turf field and have kids out there for 8 hours. It's something they need to look at. I know we had a lot of kids that were cramping up, bloody noses, and just mentally fatigued. And you get mentally fatigued, and all of a sudden, you're at third base and a line drive's hit, and you don't react well enough. I mean, you could get seriously injured. But, I'm not here to make excuses. I am extremely proud of our team, the heart and character that they showed all year and in the last week of our season is something that I've never seen matched, and I couldn't be more proud of them. I just feel bad as a coach that I wasn't able to bring them home a state championship, because they truly deserved it, and in my opinion was by far the best team in 3A this year.
Yeah, Coach, the thing that stood out to me when you guys were working through the one-loss bracket, I always had this idea that you have to score a lot of runs once you get down into that that side of the bracket, because pitching is something that you don't have a lot of, especially with the pitch counts. Yet, 2 runs you give up against ALA, you shut out Emory. The Judge game was a little bit of a shootout, if I remember correctly. But then we're talking about Juab, 4 runs. Richfield, 4 runs. First game against Grantsville, 4 runs. Defensively, what you guys were able to accomplish over those 6 games was somewhat remarkable.
Yeah, and even go to the Judge game, I mean, we had them to, to 2 runs going into the, I believe, the 6th inning, where we gave them a bunch. and just, you know, kind of had a mental breakdown there for an inning and let them get back in the ballgame and actually take the lead. But, you know, defensively all year, we allowed the least amount of runs in 3A going into the state tournament, and our defense was good. And the games where we did give up a lot of runs, we talked about this, where our pitching kind of faltered, and it was walks. Just the walks from our pitching staff hurt us. And they kind of crept back in a couple games in the state tournament where we allowed walks, and they hurt us a little bit. But, you know, our defense all year long, I mean, you're going to make errors here and there. Every team's going to. But as a whole, our pitching and our defense was just stellar. And, yeah, you think about having to win, you know, 20 to 19 games. And there were some of those games in the tournament with some other teams. But, you know, I always felt like we're not going to allow more than 5 runs a game when we play. And as long as we're able to score more than 5 in each one of those games, we're going to be successful. And that was my approach, and that was my feeling, and that's why I was so confident that we could go, you know, a week and win all those games and win a state tournament, because I was really confident that we could put up more than 5 runs a game, and I knew our pitching and defense was good enough to hold teams under 5. And, you know, if you look at it, I mean, obviously the state championship game got away from us late, you know, and lost 14-4. Which is not indicative of what the game actually was. But, you know, just a stellar job once again. I can't say enough. You know, you can't pat these guys on the back enough times and tell them enough times how proud you are of them and what this season actually meant to us as a group and as a program. Because words will never describe, you know, the great feeling I have for this group.
Again, our guest right now, manager Jeff Cincinneros of the Carbondino baseball team. Coach, I know it's meaningless to go back and look at the way things played out over the entire course of the tournament, but as I was watching the game, the final game in which Grantsville wins the state title, I thought to myself, boy, that 7-5 loss at home, that turned out to be the difference deciding a state championship. And I know it's a second-round matchup, but as you alluded to, dropping down into that one-loss bracket, it's so crucial. I think sometimes we overlook the importance of the first two rounds, knowing that if you lose one game, you're still in it. But in my mind, that was a difference. That ended up resulting in a championship for Grantsville.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, Grantsville played 4 games. Realistically, would have only had to play 3, win 1 Thursday, 1 Friday, 1 Saturday to win a state championship. And, you know, they had to play 4 because they lost the first game to us. But, you know, you lose in the first round or first 2 rounds, that first pod at home, you have to win 7 games. And, you know, that's quite a tall task when you compare it to a team that only has to win 3 to win a state championship if you win both games the first weekend. And, again, I think maybe the bracket could be looked at, because I really think that, you know, that's a little extreme to, if you lose one of the first 2 round games, to have to go that route compared to someone who doesn't, because – you know, not all the pods were the same. I mean, we talked about that with our pod being, in my opinion, the toughest pod we had over the weekend, where because you had the 4 and 5 team in the same pod. And realistically, in the RPI, you know, outside of number 1 Juab, you know, number 2, 3, 4, and 5, we were all so close in the RPI that to have the 4 and 5 team, you know, we could have very easily been swapped. Any of us could have been the 3 seed. I mean, it was just an extremely tough pod. And, but it's a game that we let get away from us, and one that, you know, is going to haunt us for quite a long time, knowing that, you know, if we would have stayed in that winner's bracket and had that route, you know, maybe we do win a state title. You just never know how that'll play out. But obviously, you know, I feel like we beat ourselves in that game with Grantsville. We end up playing, you know, Grantsville 4 times this year, both of us winning, you know, 2 games. And I really feel like we beat ourselves the game in the first round. And so, you know, it is what it is. I mean, you can look back on it now, but yeah, you know, most teams go into that opening weekend just hoping to win one game in advance. And it's, you know, it's great to look at it that way, but what you need to understand is if you only win one game and you advance, the odds of you advancing a lot farther are really slim. It's just such a tough road. And, you know, you really... I mean, I know everybody goes into that weekend hoping to win 2 games, but I think everybody's kind of relieved if you win at least one that you get to play on, and your season's still a success, which, you know, for a lot of programs it is. But, you know, for our program, and this is the way it's been at Carbon High for a long, long time. You know, we try and look at our program and say, you know, it's successful if we're winning a state title, if we're winning a region title. We're not satisfied by any means with just having a good season. And our kids work extremely hard for that. Our summer program is so vital. A lot of these programs ask me, you know, how do you get your high school program, you know, where it's at? And it's about a summer program. You know, American Legion Baseball has been extremely big in our area for 50, 60 years. And it teaches our guys how to compete at a higher level in the summer. You look at a group like Grantsville, who plays American Legion ball as well. I mean, some of these programs, that's why their high school programs are as good as they are, because of their great summer programs. And for us, you know, it's like I said, we judge our season about where we're at the end of the year and where we finish. And, you know, this was a successful season for us by our standards. I mean, playing for a state title game is awesome. And I know we fell a game short, but, you know, like I said before, we're just extremely proud of our team.
Yeah, Coach, I think we can tie this last question into one another. You have a tremendous group coming back next year. I mean, this is a team that's going to be competing again for a state championship. There's no question. And a lot of these boys we're going to see on the Legion field, and that season is getting ready to pick up as well.
Yeah, we lose five great seniors, all kids that contributed in a huge way for us this season. This group of seniors really paved the way for the younger guys. I mean, with our off-season workouts that started clear back in October, this is the first year that we really had morning workouts be as successful as they were, and I owe that to the senior group for pushing themselves and for pushing our younger guys. And I hope that, you know, our group next year will push guys to do the same thing if they want to be successful. And but you talk about guys coming back next year. I mean, our underclassmen were awesome for us all year long. You know, I could sit and mention them all, but you go clear down to our freshman, sophomore level, which I think that group lost one or two games the entire year as all. And, you know, they're going to be playing American Legion ball this summer with the three teams we have planned on playing in Helper. So, you know, they're all going to get plenty more time and, you know, just more pitching and more hitting and more fielding under their belt before high school season rolls around next year. And, you know, this will be a team that will compete again for a title next year, and in my opinion should win one. And we have that ability for the next few years, and we should have that ability every year in our program. So, but, you know, obviously the future is bright with the kids that we have coming back next year. I'm super excited for those kids to have their opportunity, and, you know, I know they'll make the most of it next year when the time rolls around.
Coach, we'll end with this. Legion tryouts actually taking place right now. As you mentioned, three teams, 15U, 17U, 19U, and then season play is going to begin early June?
Yeah, first week of June with those three teams. I know Dakota's kind of started some, you know, tryouts. He wanted to get them done as soon as possible. I know some guys are probably missing, and, you know, if anyone is wanting to play on any one of those teams, they can obviously contact him or I, or, you know, get our phone number off your website or whatever we need. But we want to make sure we put three teams on the field and know that, you know, we're trying to have as much baseball for the kids in our area as possible. A couple things I want to touch on. We had our banquet last night. It was a very emotional banquet for our group. We presented some awards last night. The Tony Pappas Award is an award that's been around Carbon Baseball for almost 40 years. I think this is the 39th year that award has been presented. Miss Lisa Pierce, who was Tony's sister, was at our banquet last night with her mother and presented that award to Brayton Nelson this year, a young man who worked extremely hard as a senior, made himself into a great baseball player, and was well-deserving of that award. And for the first time, we also had the C.J. Smuin Memorial Award that is going to be a mainstay award in the Carbon High baseball program forever. And, you know, we all know kind of a little bit of the story behind CJ and whatnot. And, you know, his parents were there last night to present that award to Cooper Shade, who was the first recipient of that award. And it was just an emotional night when you look at, you know, what we did in the state tournament and, you know, how these kids responded. And then with these prestigious awards that are given to these young men, the character and everything that goes into receiving these awards, it's not just being, you know, a great baseball player. It's about being a great student athlete. It's about being a great teammate. It's about being respectful in everything you do. And, you know, our whole senior class could have won any of those awards. And that's, you know, both presenters of those awards said that. And that's quite a statement for you to have a group of seniors that all meet the criteria that we're looking for in those awards. And I just want to congratulate those two young men on receiving those awards and how appropriate they were to receive them. And you know, it's just again, it's a baseball family that you have, and it's an awesome feeling to be a part of it. And you know, I've been a part of it now for a while, and it just gives you a great feeling. And again, I just want to tell those young men how proud I am of them, and thank them for all their great effort.
Well, Coach, you definitely gave us a lot to cheer for here in the community. Congratulations on a successful season. I know it didn't end the way you guys wanted to, but it was still through and through a successful season. And I know we'll be talking again here relatively soon with the Legion ball popping up. So I appreciate all the time.
Thanks for everything, Jordan. Do appreciate it.
Let's break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. It is Football Tuesday, and it's here on Drive Time Sports, 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAN. Play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
So now you open my eyes.
Here comes the quarterback, Burrow, looking for a block, and he got it up in the front by Hopkins into the end zone. Touchdown!
I feel I gotta lose my way.
Football Tuesday on Drive Time Sports. Jordan Buscarini alongside Vinny Rondinelli. Step aside from the local scene for just a moment, and we'll talk OTAs in the NFL. We're kind of at that dead period for about 2 months. I think once we hit July, we start getting that football itch, that itch, Vinny, because May is a little blah after the draft.
Yep.
June is very blah. But once you hit July, we're rounding the corner for preseason football. And so I guess the biggest question is, in today's NFL world, player movement is much more rampant today than it was 20 years ago. We can agree on that,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Player movement is pretty heavy in the NFL. I think there's a bigger focus on OTAs right now than there has ever been, based on the fact that, A, we get a 17-game season this year.
Yep.
That matters. And player movement alone, right? The familiarity process being played out. OTAs are important.
And in the football calendar, it really is, because, you know, if you're a rookie coach, if it's your first year with that team, you get an extra mini camp. The league allows you an extra mini camp. The rookie mini camp happened this weekend. So, you know, there's a little bit of excitement because you get to see the rookies in a uniform for the first time. These coaches get to really put the rookies on the field first time. You go through the mandatory OTAs, which nowadays are without pads, but you get some on the field work. But by, like you said, mid-June, it's over till training camp comes. So a lot of people go on vacation, they get their mind right before training camp shows up. Mid-July, end of July, you know, there's real football. And you're right, you're rounding the corner. You start preseason, then you start your football season. But, you know, there is some work being done, the rookie mini camps. They get acclimated to the coaching staff, the facilities, and all that right now. And you get to see some players for the first time in these OTAs with the new uniform.
Which is odd. I mean, yesterday, Matt Stafford comes walking out in a Ram uniform. And in this side of the country, I don't think we've ever fully appreciated what he meant to the Lions organization.
He was a great player.
He's a great player. He's a Detroit Lions legend. He's the greatest quarterback in their franchise's history.
He is, no doubt.
Okay, so that was odd to see. And so, you know, there's going to be a number of those storylines floating around. Who is the player? And I've always thought this from the time I was a little kid. When a player switches teams, it doesn't seem real until you see them in that new uniform.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, when Joe Montana left the 49ers, didn't seem real until I remember watching the Chiefs. I was like, wow, Joe Montana is a member of the Kansas City Chiefs.
And for football lifers like us, a little older, you know, there wasn't Twitter pictures.
No.
There wasn't the apps that you get now. You got to see maybe a snippet on SportsCenter, or you waited until preseason or opening day.
You didn't see press conferences. Remember, when this stuff was breaking news, it would literally be around time for the press conference. That's what it was, breaking news.
The breaking news, yes. We didn't have the internet. You didn't have the access to all the media and the pictures and everything else.
Right.
So when we were little kids, you're right. When we were younger, like Montana, switching teams, you're like, whoa, Reggie White is a Packer. Remember that? You're like, Reggie White's a Packer?
It was odd.
It was odd. It was strange. Whoa. So, yeah, and the movement is more rampant nowadays. You're seeing guys with the free agency and the way they do things. Trade with the cap and the weird last couple of years, knowing that the cap was going to be different. We've seen a lot more trades. But I tell you, one of them that I'm really excited to see, I'm really interested to see, is Carson Wentz with the horseshoe. I'm really excited about Frank Reich getting his hands on Carson Wentz. That's a good old line, and they got some weapons there. I'm really excited to see if he comes back to being one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be an odd one.
Right? Yeah, it's going to be very strange.
This is the first time that I can remember two quarterbacks that had immense success with their former team, and Goff and Wentz changing uniforms. They did.
Yeah.
They had immense success. Both of those quarterbacks went to the Super Bowl. Wentz may not have played in the Super Bowl.
But he got him there.
He got him there. He was the MVP of the league.
Yeah, he got him there.
So I'm with you. And I think the idea of seeing Wentz with Frank Reich is one of those storylines that, it's just going to be odd. It's going to be odd to see.
And it was so odd, everything that happened in Philadelphia, that just mess. You know, it really was like just a dumpster fire, just a mess at the end there. And all this coming out, well, that's gone now. You got a new team, you got new coaches, you got new unis. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be exciting to see.
So outside of Carson Wentz, is there another player that you're looking forward to seeing in a new uniform? It can be a rookie. It can be someone that changed teams. I don't care who that is. Something that you're not going to believe until you see it. And then when it hits you, you're like, wow, yeah, that really did happen.
That really happened. I am excited about Najee Harris in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. I think it's a perfect match. I love that match. I'll tell you one that's interesting to me, the whole situation, more than just a player. And I've always been a fan. I think he's underappreciated. I don't think he's an elite quarterback. But I am interested to see what Matt Nagy does with Andy Dalton. There's Justin Fields. There's a mess in Chicago last couple years of quarterback. I'm interested to see how Andy Dalton does in a new situation. I always thought he was a good quarterback. And I never thought I didn't get enough credit, because when you look back at the Bengals, other than a two-year run with Carson Palmer, you have to go back before that to Boomer Esiason, to what Andy Dalton did. He got to more playoffs than any of them guys.
Yeah. This situation with quarterbacks always interests me, where you are the fill-gap quarterback.
You're the fill-gap quarterback.
And that's what he is.
And how long does it last?
Yeah, this wasn't the case last year for Andy Dalton. So if you say, okay, well, what about his role in Dallas? No. He was never pegged to play in Dallas. He was never supposed to play for the Cowboys.
No, absolutely not.
He was a backup for Dak Prescott.
And he was a coach and a mentor for Prescott.
That's the only reason he got that job.
Yeah.
Okay. In Chicago, a team that has been limited because of their quarterback play. You got to remember, they have gone to the playoffs despite Mitch Trubisky's play.
Yeah.
And that's the amazing thing about Chicago. And we can, you know, I've been critical of Matt Nagy on the show.
Yeah.
Been highly critical of him. I think his clock management's been horrible. His game management has been horrible. But, you know, look at the fact that this guy went to the playoffs with Mitch Trubisky multiple times. Okay. Now that the Trubisky era is over and you may have your quarterback of the future, Vinny, I don't know if there's a more interesting team outside of the Packers and Texans, which we can touch on in a moment, than the Chicago Bears this offseason. I really don't.
Absolutely. What are they going to do? How long does this last? Does Justin Fields blow the doors off in training camp? You think, okay, wow, he's further along than we thought.
We've seen that happen before.
Yeah, you see it happen. I mean, I'm a homer. Everybody knows it. My Chargers. Tyrod Taylor was supposed to play and Herbert was supposed to grow. Well, thanks to the team doctor, week two, we've seen one of the greatest histories by a rookie quarterback ever.
Yeah.
These things happen. So does a freak injury happen? Does Dalton play great and Justin Fields don't even touch the field?
It's
probably the best scenario, honestly. That's what Matt Nagy's hoping for.
Yeah.
Dalton plays good, solid football. They got a good defense. Damian Williams is signed. They're upgrading their offensive line. Hey, they run the ball, play some good defense. He plays solid. They win 10 games. They may make it in. Does he get hurt and Justin Fields got to play and they tank? You know, they gave a first-round pick to move up next year. If that happens, they tank. That's a lot of draft capital now. If you win 10 games, well, that's back in the first round of that draft pick. There's so many storylines to the Chicago Bears. I think that's very interesting. I love Najee Harris, like I said, in Pittsburgh. I think it's a great fit. My homer, I can't wait to see Derwin James come back, first time in the new Charger uniforms. He hadn't played football in basically 2 years
due to
injuries, and this guy can flat play.
Let me give you another one. Kyle Pitts in Atlanta.
Kyle, that great call.
Yeah, because when you look at the Falcons, OTAs, I don't know. I know a couple of Falcon fans. I'm going to have to hit them up and say, what's your feeling right now? Because this could go one of two ways. You can see Matt Ryan come in with Julio Jones and, you know, Calvin Ridley, who's played fantastic. You had Kyle Pitts to the equation. You got some new leadership in Atlanta. Okay, it's a new era. You have a team that can contend. Or is it the season where you look at the screen and say, yeah, it's time to move on from Julio, time to move on from Matt Ryan? Right, this experiment could go one of two ways in Atlanta.
Yeah, I agree. If Matt Ryan plays good football and Julio's healthy and they're putting up 30 points a game, well, I tell you what, that they made a great choice, because I think Kyle Pitts might have been the best player in the draft.
And you follow the San Francisco 49ers storyline as well with Jimmy Garoppolo. And the Chav Trey Lance.
And just the injuries. You know, this was a team that, you know, they should have won the Super Bowl. Flat out, they should have won the Super Bowl 15
2 years ago?
Ago. Yeah. Absolutely.
No doubt.
They should have won that game. And they should be sick that they lost it. And then the injuries last year, you just have to throw that out, because a team that falls that far with that many injuries, you just got to throw that out. Now, if they're healthy and that defense plays pretty good, they're a playoff football team. They're right there at being a playoff football team. Then what? What if Garoppolo throw for 4,500 yards and 35 touchdowns?
That's not out of the realm of possible. No,
absolutely not. What if he comes out on fire and plays great? Then Shanahan and Lynch are looking at each other like, whoa, maybe we gave up too much to have a backup quarterback on our team.
You said something to me, though, Vinny, a couple of weeks ago when we've jumped all over this segment, so I think, you know, if we're talking about the 49ers, who actually just signed Marquise Lee, by the way, right? Gives him some speed on the outside. You brought up that some quarterbacks never recover from a bad showing in the Super Bowl.
It's true.
You brought that up, and I think history would suggest that there's some merit to what you said. In fact, you just look at the NFC West. They had two teams go to the Super Bowl in 3 years. Those two teams lost, and what happened? The quarterback struggled the following year. One of them's not even playing anymore in that town. The other one's replacement just came to town. So when you look over the course of history, you believe in that?
Yeah, absolutely. Some teams never get over it, and we've talked about this with your Rams and Kyle Shanahan. Coaches never get over quarterbacks not making the play to win a Super Bowl. I think there's two ends to that, too. I think the reason Jared Goff's not a Ram is because Sean McVay, he lost the Super Bowl. And I think he blames Jared Goff. And I think Shanahan feels the same way. He said,
he
blames Garoppolo. He's got a wide-open guy for the winning touchdown, and he missed him. They should have won that game. Both those teams should have won that game, and they didn't. And I don't think them offensive coaches ever get over that. And quarterbacks, they may never recover from that as well. We'll see. If Jared Goff plays lights out in Detroit, God bless him. I hope he does. But if he's an average quarterback, well, maybe McVay was right.
Yeah, see, there are storylines in the OTAs.
Yeah, there's tons of storylines. The NFL, like you always say, they write themselves.
Yeah, they do. They do.
They really do.
And they did a great job last week with the schedule release.
Yeah.
No other sport. I'm a huge baseball guy. I'm a huge basketball guy. No one cares when those schedules are released.
No.
The NFL, it's an event.
Hey, nobody watches the Major League draft, the baseball draft.
No.
Nobody's watching that.
No. Everybody
the
watches
the draft. They try to drum up interest, but
people watch the first 13 picks of an NBA draft. The NFL schedule, we actually get to see a player and a coach looking at a screen, getting the call on where they're going.
They market themselves so good.
Yeah, they do. They do a terrific job with it.
The NFL, they're great at that. They really are.
Now, there have been two storylines that we have not talked a lot about. I know you're looking forward to talking about them. Green Bay and Houston.
We
haven't really talked. You and I have talked a lot about it off air, but we haven't talked about it on air. So let's take a quick commercial break. We'll come back. We'll talk Green Bay and Houston. That's coming up next here on Drive Time Sports.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 7:50 a.m.
Football Tuesday on Drive Time Sports. And if you're a Denver Bronco fan, I guess you're holding out hope that maybe, just maybe, you find a way to add a new quarterback to your roster mid-May or late May, early June. That quarterback, of course, would be Aaron Rodgers. But it is a big storyline in OTAs because there's obviously some sort of, dare I say, discomfort within that organization. Yeah. There is.
There is.
I know there's some tension. There's tension, okay? I don't care what side of the fence you're on, and I know you believe things are being blown up more than what they really are. Or maybe you're a believer that, no, things are really that bad in Green Bay. Regardless, there's something there.
Yeah, absolutely. There is some tension, no doubt.
So what happens?
I think he plays. I just he has no other option. He has no leverage. I mean, he can say, well, I'm Aaron Rodgers. But in reality, you're a grown man and you signed a contract. If you retire, guess what? You have to pay back $23 million of your signing bonus to the Packers. You're not going to do that. You have a good football team in Green Bay, too. So it's not like he's going to get beat up and win five games. This is a Super Bowl contending team. So I think there's some, you know, when you listen to, you know, John Kuhn and James Jones, some of these guys that talk to Rodgers say, hey, there's an issue here, but it's blown way out of proportion. I tend to think that way. The media is drumming up interest because it is the offseason. I think there's some issues that have to be going, you know, in Green Bay. But as far as, you know, the headline, zero chance he ever suits up for a Packer again, well, as a Packer that. Again, that's ridiculous.
Zero? No.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. So I think they get patched up. I think there's some language in the contract gets cleaned up. And I think Rodgers goes out and he plays MVP-style football. And I think the Packers are going to be right in the mix in the NFC Championship game.
Okay, so let's say, for the sake of this segment, they do trade him. Two most logical destinations in your eyes would be where?
Well, that's interesting. I would say probably Houston and Denver.
Houston.
They don't have a quarterback.
Wow.
Jordan, they don't have a quarterback.
Well, that's true. I guess,
but then you have to throw in this factor too that it's probably cap prohibitive for the Green Bay Packers to trade him. That's one thing that has to be thrown out there. It'd take a real miracle for them to make the money work. Then the other team has to come up with compensation and have the money to pay him. So the odds are pretty long.
I throw that out the window though, because it seemed unreasonable for the Rams to move Goff, and it seemed unreasonable for the Lions to move on from Stafford. In the NFL, you can find a way. We've seen this.
Yeah, that's true. Denver's the only logical place.
What about Las Vegas?
I guess that's a...
You'd have to send Carr back.
You have to send Carr back.
Okay.
That might be your player. Yeah, Las Vegas has a chance. Hey, that's the opening of a stadium.
Okay, so let's say...
That's the opening of a stadium.
Right.
So
and
they need... The market they need
fits.
That, yeah. What does Denver offer back?
Well, this is the point that I'm trying to make, though. Let's say, because Houston has no chance of winning a Super Bowl, they could have whoever behind center. They're not going to win a Super Bowl next year, okay? Could Denver or Las Vegas honestly send Green Bay a package? Because the rumor is a minimum of two first-round draft picks and a key player. Could either of those two teams send that package and still be considered a Super Bowl contender by bringing in Aaron Rodgers?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Then why would you make that trade if you're Denver or Las
Vegas? I agree
with
you. It's just not logical for this to even happen. But okay, so Las Vegas. Let's look at it.
Yeah.
You know, you get rid of Carr. There's some weapons there. Let's be honest. Waller is incredible.
Yeah.
Waller can flat play. Ruggs can run.
You got a lot of backfield.
Josh Jacobs, You know, the O-line, they did some shuffling there, but it looks okay. That defense is terrible. They are not going to win Super Bowl with that defense. And in that division... Yeah, you know, Aaron Rodgers. But Aaron Rodgers is 38 years old. You know, he's going to have to outgun Mahomes and Herbert. Well, those defenses are a lot better than the Raiders' defense.
Okay, so Denver.
What do you give back? I mean, the Packers, why would they trade to Denver? Who's going to be their quarterback? They're going to go from Super Bowl team to a middling team with Jordan Love. What do they get back? Drew Locke?
You wouldn't want a quarterback in return. So you start looking at position players.
Yeah.
Okay, well, who would you give up of any sort of significance that you would look at and say, okay, two first-round picks and...
Denver's biggest assets are going to be pass rushers. Well, guess what? Green Bay has those.
That's what I'm saying. Like it's
not logical for this to happen. There's not a partner for it to happen. You know, like with Denver. I mean, the Packers, if they give up Aaron Rodgers... at least with Las Vegas, they get a playoff quarterback. David Carr can play. Derek Carr. He can play.
Yeah, he can play. Yeah.
And LaFleur, you know, it comes from that same kind of offense. It'll be a lot of similar concepts between Gruden and LaFleur and that. So, you know, he can move around. Are the Packers a playoff team with Carr and a quarterback? Yes.
They're close.
Yeah, they're close. A playoff team.
They're close.
But what do they get from Denver? Because you have to look at this from Green Bay's point of view. They could say, well, we got to get something back. And maybe they just take the – if Rodgers stands his ground and says, all right, I'm not going to play, and they call his bluff, he's got to pay back the money. Plus, they got to wait until after June 1st because of the cap. And then they got to rework some money to ship him because the cap charge is going to be heavy. And then Green Bay goes from probably one of the top teams in the NFC to middle of the pack. Because Jordan Love's not ready to play like that.
No, if Jordan Love was ready to play, Rodgers would be gone already.
Yeah.
They would have pulled the trigger when San Francisco...
If they thought Jordan Love was ready to be a Pro Bowl quarterback. Draft night, Rodgers is gone.
Yeah. Yeah, they would have shipped him to San Francisco. They
Absolutely.
Would have. He's not ready. So, yeah, this is a fun storyline because there is some tension. There's problems
there. Yeah, there's some tension there.
There has been problems. For 2 years, there has been problems there. There was problems that he... Go back 2 years ago when San Francisco destroyed Green Bay in the NFC Championship game. There were problems then that we could see on the surface.
Yeah.
I don't believe that Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers, that's not a match made in heaven. Never has been.
But some of it, too, is, you know, how much this, let's put this back on Rodgers.
I put all of it on Aaron Rodgers.
He's prickly. He's got a prickly personality, you know, cactus, you know. And he's tough to take for some guys. And he signed a big-time contract with the NFC title game. Hey, they may win that game if he runs it in.
It's possible. Yeah, it's possible. Let me ask you this question. You've watched football your entire life. Can you recall the last time a quarterback, and we could agree that he was the reason Mike McCarthy got ousted, right?
Yeah.
It was Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Can you recall the last time a Super Bowl winning quarterback got his Super Bowl winning head coach fired? Has that ever happened?
No.
So to say that Aaron Rodgers has a point... No, he does not have a point.
He signed a contract.
That's right.
And this is a good football team. He needs to be the quarterback of the football team. That's it. He needs to show up and be the quarterback of the football team and the leader of the football team. Leave the front office to the front office. Leave the player personnel to the scouting department. Show up and be the quarterback. I think that's what happens.
The NFL Football Tuesday, always fun here on Drive Time Sports. And tomorrow we'll talk more NBA basketball, more playing around basketball. Tomorrow, the marquee matchup, it's the Lakers and the Warriors, LeBron and Steph Curry, who's put together just a brilliant season. We'll talk about that. We'll continue to wrap up the baseball season as well. That'll be tomorrow on Drive Time Sports. He's Vinny Rondinelli. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.